Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back after Sunderland's 2-1 home defeat at the hands of Sheffield United. And joining me for this very, we'll see it quick, we'll probably be here for an hour, Chris, no one else, is Chris. Hey mate.
I'm not bad. Reasonably happy after a defeat, which is bizarre. I mean, don't get us wrong, I'm not happy, but it's not a Stoke defeat. So it's not going to be that. It's not going to be that sort of conversation, which at least is a blessing.
No, I said this last night. The reactions just, I think when you lose a game, you want to come away from it feeling like you could see what we were trying to achieve. And like that was the difference for me between this and like, say, a Stoke. Because the Stoke game, you've seen the result coming a mile off. Probably better comparison might be maybe Coventry or Rotherham, where I came out of those games and I just, some of the decision-making and stuff and the team selection and what have you, I couldn't understand. And that's why I was really frustrated. Where with this one, I can see what we were trying to do in the game. I think, obviously, and we'll come on to this, but, it's probably a different result if the officials do their jobs. And that's all we're talking about, really, coming out of the game is that. And to be honest, if you're Tony Mowbray, you're probably glad as well, though, because it takes a little bit of pressure off the players. It gives us something to take into the next game with a bit of bite, you know, because we're probably frustrated by the result, but not by our own performance necessarily. So, yeah, I don't feel particularly disheartened by the fact we got beat. I mean, you do have to remember who they are. I know that they've not been in fantastic form recently, but they're second in the table. Up until probably 3-4 weeks ago, they were right up against Burnley in terms of the points. Like, it was literally them two pulling away. Nobody else was getting near them. And the importance of this game, really, from their perspective, was they needed to win because they've got Borough breathing down their necks. So this was a massive game for Sheffield United. They knew they needed to win it because the pressure is on them to keep Borough away. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not disheartened. I could sit and pick at certain performances and aspects of the performance. And I know a lot of fans did after the game last night. But I just think, as a general opinion, that we can sort of move on quickly from this one. I don't feel like there's anything to really mull over, particularly for more than a couple of days, and we'll just move on to the next game. And, you know, maybe that's the buffer that this 50-odd point mark has provided us now. We haven't got particularly much pressure on us now going into the end of the season, and it's just a case of the games like against the likes of Sheffield United, Norwich, Luton, we can play with a bit more freedom without worrying and looking over our shoulders.
That's what I was thinking after the game. There's so many positives to take from this game. And I actually think Tony Mowbray will use this game as, let's look at it as a positive and let's look at the game. Look at what we did so well. Because, I mean, for the first time, I think this season, I looked at Tony Mowbray on the sidelines and I looked at how the game was going at certain points and looked at the Sheffield United team. And there was real periods where they just penned us in and they just looked stronger and all this. And we were trying to hold out and we were doing as well as we were battling, you know, the players were battling, like, you know, same as the Norwich game, really. They carried on from where they left off at Norwich. But for the first time, I looked at Tony Mowbray and some of his expressions on the sideline, and I actually thought, I can understand his position because he's got this, and look, we've said it a lot, but actually the realisation kind of hit home during the game against Sheffield United that when you looked at him, sometimes he had his head in his hands, he had his hand over his eyes and he was kind of just rubbing his face. And I just thought, I get it. He's got this squad of kids And at times in that game, that you just saw Sheffield United were so much stronger than us. They were just...
Yeah.
They had that experience. They had that nous. They had that... Tony Mowbray at times, the amount of league games he played, he was tearing his hair out because he could see these young lads making those mistakes. And he hasn't got these players where he hasn't got a midfield full of players, the equivalent of Danny Barton in midfield, who's going to be your general and get their foot in and all this. I mean, if you see, you know, they had the two lads from Man City in midfield, Doyle and McAtee and Burge as well. And you could just see that at times we were kind of describing it in certain periods of the game as men against boys. And it was, and we had to battle so much. Michu came off late in the game, and he was battered and bruised. He'd been kicked all over the place. And you could see his facial expression. There was once he got injured on the far side. He just looked like he wanted to stay on the floor because he was just, he was that battered and bruised off the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just kind of hit me last night that you've got this side who are just learning, and they're just kids, and they're playing first team football for the first time. And to go in with a game, you know, under the cosh as well, to come out of that kind of first 10, 15 minutes of just Sheffield United pinning us in. You know, we got off to a good start, but they pinned us in. To get out of that period and then turn it around after half an hour and score the first goal of the game, I mean, that showed so much guts from this team, because they're just a bunch of kids. And Sheffield United, as we saw in periods last night, are just a bloody good side. They're a really good team.
They've got so many good players.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the team now, and notwithstanding the starting 11, on the bench they've got John Fleck, who's played Premier League football, Chris Basham, who's played Premier League football, Ollie McBurney, I think they paid like 15 million for him. He's had a fantastic season. I think he's been one of the best strikers in the league. Billy Sharp has played at every level, scored goals. Ollie Norwood's probably their best player. You know, looking at the rest of the team, he's probably been their best player this season. Bogle, who normally plays right wing back, came on at some point. Like, that was their bench. Then you look at the team, you know, Egan at the back's a Premier League defender. Ahmed Ozic? I think he scored in the first game against us. He was outstanding. McAtee, Doyle and Burge, they're all Premier League players
to me.
They were
brilliant. A midfield that is, though.
Yeah.
And for Neil and Bishu to go up against those three, I thought they did unbelievably well.
Yeah. And then up front, you know, Illiman and Dai, who's been one of the most promising players in the Championship this season and played international football. I think he played at the World Cup, didn't he? You know, like, quality team. Like, and we did at periods go toe-to-toe with them and just fell short. And I think the quality shone through. And there's no harm in that. Like, I remember feeling a little bit like this after the Norwich game at home right at the start of the season, where it was a bit, you know, we had a bit of a ding-dong with them, and then they just brought lads off the bench who were good players. And sometimes you just got to hold your hands up and say we aren't competing. Yeah. But the heart you can take from this is that this is a very young team. And next season, with a good summer window, there's no reason why we can't be looked at in that vein, where people can look at us and go, Sunderland have got a lot of quality players who are Premier League quality. And maybe it is a step too far for us this year. But we say this quite a lot. Other than a handful of games, I don't think we've been second best very often this season, like where we've been obviously second best. Stoke, definitely. I think other than that, there's probably been a couple of games where we've been shite, you know. But other than that, we genuinely do compete. And, you know, it's nice to see, and I'm sort of going off a tangent here, but Michu, for instance, scoring the goal. And I thought you had a great game on Sunday. And there's a player, right? If Corey Evans hadn't have got the injury that he got, we might never have seen this. Sometimes with like a loss like that, opportunity arises for a player and they step up. And I think Michu, compared to the kid who was here in the first half, he's a different player. There was a point around Christmas time where he was still injured, but he wasn't contributing whatsoever. And I would have happily said, just let him go back to Paris, like, because he barely played in the first half of the season. And when he did play, you know, we weren't seeing anything from him. It was and it was just like, I didn't really see like the point in him being here. And it's been lovely to see that he's just had an opportunity and he's took it and he's improved. And you're on about there saying that he got battered and bruised by the time he came off the pitch, but it's that side of the game that is a really improved for him. Like, I thought at Norwich he put himself about brilliantly, and you look at him physically, he's like a little boy, but you know, he is doing his best out there to try and sort of become a more well-rounded midfield player. There was a lot of that in this game where I felt we did ourselves justice, even if we came out, you know, on the other end of the result. And obviously there's a bunch of stuff to talk about, so we might as well go through some of it. because, you know, we've been pretty positive since we started. But the overarching discussion point coming away from the game was the officiating, obviously. I was at the game, so obviously I didn't hear any of the coverage on Sky of the various decisions. And it was only afterwards, really, where I felt a little bit vindicated, because coming away from the ground, I was whinging about the refs and the linesmen and stuff. And then, you know, as I'm coming home, I'm reading the comments from Tony Mowbray, and it was interesting that their manager even stood up for us, which is refreshing, because that doesn't happen very often, where the opposition managers come out and back the other opposition manager, like in our case Mowbray, when it comes to what he thinks about how the game was officiated. So, you know, we've talked there, I think Sheffield United were the better team, but it doesn't tell the full story, because if the officials do their jobs, and me and you have talked about this so many times, like there's nothing we can do about it. The refs are fundamentally shite. The linesmen are fundamentally shite. There's just nothing we can do about it other than complain about it. But I do think that games like this, where there were probably millions of people watching it, and it shines a bit of a spotlight on the issue in the Championship, because we've had this all season, is that because the officials are that bad, there is a real case to be made for like bringing in VAR, just because of how bad it is. And I wonder whether this game might be used as an example put forward to say, look, we need this at this level soon, because they, like, all refs make mistakes, all linesmen make mistakes, but these are decisions that would have been referred and then would have been different. You know, you could say about Hume. I think with VAR, Hume probably gets sent off. I don't think it was a red card, personally. I think that's one of the ones the ref got right. But I think with VAR, he probably gets sent off, and I wonder if their manager would have agreed with that. There's the handball, which I think came at 0-0 20 minutes or so into the game, where we pumped the ball into the box. Danny Bard heads it across box. Sander Berg has got his hands up in the air. It definitely strikes his arm. All of our players appeal it. The referee waves it away. At 0-0, that's a penalty we potentially score. That's 1-0 to us. And obviously after that, there was a bunch of other contentious stuff. I think there's a couple of other sort of half chances, calls for penalties and stuff. And the second goal from Sheffield United, which is blatant offside, which the linesman's looking right across. The players are in pattern on the ball. Even though they don't touch it, they are involved. And that's how we lose the game, ultimately. So the officiating generally was a big talking point coming out of this game, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we've talked about, we talk about it every week, every game. It's, you know, talking about officials. Very rarely do we. I think there was one game where we didn't notice the officials, so we actually sang his praises, and we were like, absolutely brilliant, because he didn't notice
it. Was it QPR away, maybe?
It was one game or something.
Yeah.
because we realised we weren't going to talk about it, and we actually raised it just to say, oh, we didn't actually notice the referee.
Yeah.
You know, as far as VAR is concerned, someone raised a good point saying that you're talking about, at the end of the day, a prize that's worth, what is it, 150 million, 200 million or whatever, promotion to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Let's say Sheffield United pip Middlesbrough by 2 points.
Yeah.
At the end, and you look back to this decision and Middlesbrough don't go up through the playoffs.
Go back even further to the last playoff final, the Championship playoff final last season. Huddersfield were genuinely robbed by decisions that would have been given by VAR. So that was a £150 million game, whereby, you know, look at Huddersfield now. It is that big, really.
Yeah.
You know, but we can sit and debate VAR all day, but
what I would say about VAR in the Championship is I can kind of see why it's difficult for them to manage and do it in the Championship, because you've got such a wide variety of clubs of different financial stature.
I did think that, but they do it in Scotland in the top division, and there's clubs in there who are like League Two clubs, really, and they've got VAR.
But I think in Scotland it's as much of a PR thing, because if, you know, they don't want to be seen as a Mickey Mouse league if they don't have VAR in the top division.
Shows it can be done, though, you know, shows it can be done.
It's true, it does show that it can be done, but I think there's as much of PR in Scotland and just kind of throwing money at it to make sure it's done. But in the Championship, I mean, let's say, you know, you get a really small side getting promoted from League One and, you know, does it, can you actually do it, logistics of it? But then where do you draw the line? Because League One will say, well, hang on, the Championship's got it. And if the Football League is a collective, then they'll probably turn around and say, well, if the Championship has it, then League One and League Two has to have it. And then it's finding funds to do that. So I think there was a lot to be discussed on that. Don't disagree with you. I mean, last night it would have, You know, actually, I think it would have been, we would have lost some and won some on VAR against Sheffield United.
All I want to see is a game fairly officiated.
But you're not going to get that.
If we lose some decisions,
VAR isn't going to change that.
But I know what you're saying, that VAR isn't flawless. But I mean, I'm not just talking about this game specifically. I feel like this after most games. I'm just like, God almighty, these are such obvious calls that, like, I don't know. We could sit and debate it all night, but I just think there's maybe a case for it regardless of this game. I think, you know, speak to any fan of any championship club and they're probably just as pissed off as we are about generally officiating.
Well, what you said about Heckenbottom last night, I think his reaction to almost say, oh, well, you know, when he saw the video back when they were interviewing after the game and he saw, yeah, we got away with one then, and he's laughing because he's probably seen so many other ridiculous decisions. And even though Sheffield United are doing well, they're probably... lots have gone against them, but they're good enough to kind of come out and win the game. But, you know, sometimes you're just left scratching your head. But VAR isn't going to change the flow of the game and the decisions within the game, because sometimes we're scratching our heads about free kick after free kick after free kick, and VAR can't change that. They can catch the big ones, like the offside.
Yeah.
Can't catch the just general crap officiating through the 90 minutes, which we see all the time. And there was one last night, there was a perfect example where there was a shove off, kind of almost off the ball when they were chasing for the ball. And a few minutes earlier, the ref didn't give it. 2 minutes later, a Sheffield United player goes down to free kick. Exactly the same situation, exactly the same push. And 1 minute they give it. That's the stuff you can't legislate for with VAR. It's just going to happen. I mean, what we've realised these last few years, League One, and then everyone thought it was going to change in the Championship, and it hasn't. The standard of refereeing in this country is fundamentally crap. And there needs to be an overhaul of how that's done. And they've just appointed somebody, the head of the Referees Association. I can't actually remember off the top of my head who it is, but they've just appointed someone.
Howard Webb,
there.
Wasn't it? I think.
It was at Howard Webb, was it? Yeah. It rings a bell. But he's got a hell of a job on his hands, because if they assess everybody in the league, I mean, every report will be coming back saying, he's crap, he's crap, he's crap. Yeah. So where do they go?
Yeah. Let's run through some of the key decisions then in a bit more detail. So the first one then, the handball at 0-0, 19 minutes into the game. I say handball. Do you think it was a handball? Would you have gave a penalty for that?
I'm leaning on the side of penalty, because I'm kind of thinking that he put his hands there thinking this might be where the ball's going to go. But the distance between the header and where he was would put that element of doubt. Even if it went to VAR, it would be, well, hang on, because that's a discussion. It's the position of the hands versus the distance of the ball. Mm-hmm. And I just think where his hands is suggests that I think he kind of meant to do it, and it's probably a penalty. But the element of doubt comes in because the header was so close to where his arms were.
Yeah. And the referee, to me, though, in this situation, he's about 30 yards away from where the ball is. Like, when the ball comes into the area, the ref is way outside the box, nowhere near the play at all. That's why he doesn't see it, because he's nowhere near the play.
I don't know. You know? Don't know why you're surprised.
Nah. You know, it's just really frustrating. But so to me, that's a penalty. Then you're thinking, well, there's a chance to go 1-0 up. But we don't get it. We don't get it. So there's nothing really much else to say. And it was only a minute or so later, the Trey Hume tackle / assault on, I think it was Jebison. Yeah, I think, do you know what it is? Me and you watched it back before we obviously recorded, and pulled it back a number of times. Personally, I think that it's the correct decision. I'm not just saying that because he's a Sunderland player. I would say that if it was the other way around as well, because I actually think we've sort of been conditioned to think that's a red card, because it happens so often. And I just think sometimes, you know, you watch the way the lad got straight back up, like, got on with it, played the rest of the game. And I just think, you know, yes, it was a hard tackle. It was reckless. It was a stupid tackle, yes. But I don't think it was particularly dangerous. I just think it probably was made to look worse than it was by the fact all of their players surrounded the ref, which is something we never do, by the way. We never do that. And I wish we would, because we maybe would get a couple of decisions our way. But they surround the ref. And to be fair to the ref, he went straight for the yellow card, and he didn't care that they were surrounding him, and he kept his hand on that yellow card. Who was it who got sent off earlier in the season, where the ref changed he had the yellow in his hand and he changed it to a red at the Stadium of Light? I'm trying to think. I think it might have been 09 against Swansea, actually, where the ref actually had a yellow in his hand. The opposition player surrounded him. So we've seen that this season where the ref's changed his mind based on the sort of reaction of the other players. So fair play to him in that situation. Like, I actually think he got that right. But yeah, I mean, I'll let you have your say on it. You obviously, you had something to say about the fact he even made the tackle, didn't you?
I mean, yeah, we watched it back and we realised that it actually came out of complete frustration for because of a minute earlier, the lad who he ended up fouling basically shoved him off the ball. And basically, he got the better of him. So Hume just saw the red mist. And then he saw his chance when he was going to turn on the ball. But then he flicked the ball before he kind of got there. And Hume was ready to smash him. But I think because he flicked the ball through, it made it look a lot worse because he completely missed the ball and just went through the man. And it was a ridiculous tackle. And the whole fact that it ended up being a decision for the referee. And we've talked about this before on a couple of occasions where, and I think Hume with the penalty as well, there was a few weeks back, the late penalty at Bristol City. Again, it's given the referee an opportunity to make a decision. And the referee, I mean, I think you're probably right. It is probably more of a yellow, but not that much. You know, it's probably 60-40, something like that. If you ask 10 referees, you know, probably 6 might give a yellow card and 4 might send them off. So, but what you're doing in that instance, in an area of the pitch where it makes no difference, you're giving the referee a chance to put you down to 10 men. When there's no need.
Similar to that 09 one I just mentioned.
Yes, I was just about to say, there was no danger in that area of the pitch and you've got a chance to put, because we were battling and we needed, I mean, 10 men against Sheffield United, they would have ripped us apart. It would have been 3 or 4, easy. But, you know, you just don't give the referees that decision. And I think you're probably right. He probably just about came out with the right decision, but not by much. I mean, like you said, if VAR had been around and then looked at it, they might have said, well, he's completely missed the ball. He's went over the top. He's caught the man. He's reckless. He's out of control. It's a red card.
Yeah.
But yeah, just don't give the referees a chance to give those decisions, because actually, more often than not, they've gone against us this season.
Yeah. And then a little bit against the run of play came our goal just before the half-hour mark. the ball, I think we sort of had it in the corner. Their defender tries to lump it forward. Danny Bart makes a great clearance to win the header, which falls to Dan Neal. He has a mile of space in the middle of the pitch, passes it to Bar. Gelhardt pulls away a little bit, and Michu then opens up and great finish across the goalkeeper into the bottom corner. First ever professional goal. Nice move. I mean, we've become accustomed to watching Sunderland play some nice stuff, but I mean, I was really happy with it just because one, Bar got on the ball and got an assist. And I don't think he did a great deal in the game, but at least he's coming up with key moments. There's an assist, he got a goal on Sunday. Michu getting himself forward and getting a goal. When we're lacking a striker, we need players to contribute around the pitch. So it just goes back to what I said before about his all-round game improving a little bit recently. And yeah, good goal, wasn't it?
And it's funny, just before I get at the goal, it's the statement that you're just kind of making there says a lot about our team. In 4 days, we've had 2 players who've scored their first professional goal.
Yeah.
In the space of 4 days. I mean, how much does that tell you about our squad? That, you know, 2 players, you know, and you're not talking defenders either. You're not talking centre-halves or full-backs either. But yeah, just go back a little bit further, because you went from when Danny Bart won the ball. But Michu made this, and it was probably, I didn't see him doing, or him or Dan Neal doing this in the rest of the game. Just before that, he made a run, a belting run forward, and the ball was kind of played right into the corner for him, and he won the ball right into next to the corner flag, and he was kind of the furthest forward person at that point, and he ended up getting shrugged off the ball and losing it, and that's when they cleared it. But that's when Michu was in the corner next to the corner flag, so he was way, because he'd made that run, and he found himself in that position because he was a bit knackered after making the run, and he didn't sprint to get back. And he was kind of in the position he was almost by accident, because he made that sprint forward. And then because he was there by accident, he took so long to get back on side. The Sheffield United defenders didn't even know he was there. They had no clue. He was just kind of hanging around, kind of just kind of 5 yards behind them. We were watching the goal back, like you said, and Gellard made this run and took that the centre half away that was keeping everyone on side, which meant Michu was kind of level with the rest of them, but in acres of space. And like you said, Dan Neal and Barr played it. They were brilliant the way they got their head up and took control of the ball and made sure they found people in space. But Michu was almost there by accident. Again, fantastic finish, you know, exactly what you said. But it comes back to this risk-reward of playing home and away, you know, making those runs forward. Because against Norwich, we could easily sit in, just sit in front of the back four and hope to hit them on the break and let the, you know, the forefront lads, whatever, you've, you know, Barr, Gellard, Clark, Roberts, just do their thing. And Neil and Michu just said, we're not going anywhere. We're just going to sit in front of this back four and just protect them. But Michu made that run. It was a little bit out of character. And we got something from it because we had players forward. So when Neil and Barr looked up, it wasn't just Gellard or Roberts and Clark sitting wide. We actually had players forward because Michu was in that forward position that could play him in, and he did the rest. But it's getting that kind of balance right between making those runs forward but not leaving us exposed at the back.
Yeah. And they got the equaliser, worst possible time in injury time of the, at the end of the first half. I always think that's the worst time to concede a goal. And it came from a sloppy pass from Patrick Roberts in the middle of the pitch. He tries to sort of spread it to Jack Clark. Totally underhit, crap ball, really. And all it does, it catches on the hop because everybody's out of position, really. They advance down the right. I think it is Baldock, I think.
Baldock, yeah, the right back. Brilliant.
Who carries it, does really well. And like I say, there's a gulf really in the middle of the park, which they exploit, and it's McAtee who scores the goal. And to me, it was like sort of in that Foden, Gareth Bale type mold type goal where he just, I think it's 0-9, in fact, can't get near him pace wise, and then just bounces off him, and it's a lovely finish with his left foot sort of across to the bottom corner. Like at the time, I was really frustrated with Roberts for making the mistake for the pass. But on watching it back as well, you've got to give credit to McAtee. It's a fantastic finish, fantastic goal. Just a really bad time to concede. And we were talking about it on the way out of the ground, but like our game management at that point, it's shit. Like, why are we trying to play a pass like that in injury time at the end of the first half? Just keep the ball, see the game out till half time. You're 1-0 up. Instead, we're trying to break the lines and score another goal. And that goal is... it's totally self-inflicted. If we manage the game better and we just hold the ball for a couple of minutes going into half-time, we're 1-0 up going into half-time. That's the frustration for me, is that... you can say it's like us being a young team or whatever, but that's a more experienced player who's made that pass. Roberts has been here long enough. Like, you know, it's not a young kid making that mistake. And for me, that's probably one of the biggest things missing since Corey Evans got injured, is just having that player who just tells everyone what to do in the middle of the park and slows it down and keeps it calm, because that was just a daft goal, really. It was a great finish, but self-inflicted for me.
Yeah, you've kind of said it all, really. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. And literally the clock was ticking 45 as he played the ball on the TV. It clicked 45 when he almost kind of gave it away, and you just thought, oh, what a time to do that. And it was just ridiculous, absolutely no need. And this was the turning point in the whole game. If we went in 1-0, Tony Mowbray could have gotten reorganised, maybe changed the tactics a little bit, you know, almost kind of dug in, you know, get the 3 points and all this sort of stuff. But you go in at 1-1 and then you're kind of starting all over again to try and get a goal in the second half. And you're almost kind of just resetting and going the same, because you have to try and push on and get a goal. But we've done the hard work. And then just to blow it like that in 45 minutes. I mean, look, Patrick Roberts, he'll need nobody to tell him, you know, what we're saying. He'll be fully aware of, you know, that decision-making and all this sort of stuff. It does tie in with a lot of decisions we've made this season in game management. And again, you go back to the squad being young. But Patrick Roberts, he knows better than that. And he could have just turned around, kept the ball. But it felt like we were going to catch him on the break. And to be fair, if he did play that ball well, like we know he can, Clark was in. So, you know, it's that risk reward. But again, when I was talking about that midfield and those midfield runs, if you watch that goal back, Roberts was trying to play that ball wide. And if you watch, Dan Neil and Michu were both busting a gut to get forward and join the attack, both of them.
Yeah. Wrong time of the game to do it. Goes back to that Evans thing. Like, Evans wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. If they'd just sat, because the ball was played out wide to Baldock, and Baldock, because, I mean, fantastic run from Baldock. He made about 30 yards. But what he did was, he didn't just make those 30 yards up. He almost ran, he beat Michu down the right-hand side. So he was in, he played the ball in behind when he played it inside. It was in behind Dan Neil and Michu. Yeah. So it was in between the defence and midfield, because they couldn't get back because they'd bombed on too much. And then when McAtee picked the ball up, his touches were brilliant, absolutely perfect. His first touch took it beyond 0-9. Bart didn't know whether to commit himself. And then the finish was fantastic. All the credit goes to them taking advantage. But you can look at us. There was a lot of things we could have done to stop that goal.
Yeah. And then the most contentious of them all, the winner. I've just been watching it back there in the background. And, like, again, it comes back to this thing about officials and stuff. Like, mistakes can be made, human errors there. But in at a set piece, the linesman's job is to watch the line. he's looking right along that line to make sure nobody's offside, right? So the ball comes in. Berger is a good 3, 4, 5 yards off. And he's quite clearly, he actually makes a motion to kick the ball.
Yeah, tries to get it. It's
like, there's not really anything to discuss. It's a blatant offside.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it. He doesn't have to touch the ball. He's in an offside position and he makes an attempt to kick the ball. It's an offside. So, it's just, I mean, for Mowbray to come out after the game and criticise a referee and an official is something, because more often than not, he will bite his tongue. Their manager, like you say, he even watched it back and said, I can't remember the exact words, but it was something like, I'd be horrified or something like that if I was Tony Mowbray. And then I think it was one of the local journalists, I can't remember which one, came out after the game and said that Tony Mowbray had said the officials had actually been in to apologise for that goal.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't say that one.
Yeah, I've just seen that. It was Phil Smith from the Sun and Echo tweeted, that Tony Mowbray had said the officials had visited him after the game to apologise for the second goal.
Yeah.
Just, what do you say about that?
Because that's it. I mean, in that situation, even the referees, what can they say? There's no way they can turn around and say, well, we think we were right because of this. There's nothing about that goal that wasn't, you know, it was just offside, but it wasn't just his arm, it wasn't just his leg. I mean, they were standing in an offside position. Either the linesman missed that completely, which then he's completely incompetent, or he then thought the rules were that he had to make contact with it, even so then he's incompetent that way. So there's no way the referees and linesmen can turn around and say, he was onside because of this. It was just it was a bad call, bad decision. And, you know, the only really thing they could do really is apologise, because they should do. There's nothing really much more you can say about it. It was offside. It was given. But there was kind of this arrogance, though, that, like, we went up to the referee. Danny Bart and Ballard sprinted up to the referee. But it was this, it's the arrogance of not saying, I'm going to talk to the linesman or, you know, or whatever, just to have a word and say, did you see him try and play for the ball, and have a conversation and say, well, actually, because I think he was offside, but I don't know if he was close to the ball or what, whatever. Even if they have that conversation, but the arrogance of just saying, no, it was a goal, and get them to go away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what kind of pisses people off as well. But yeah, it was offside. There's nothing more you can say about it, really.
Yeah. Andy gave man the match on the site to Luke O'Neill, and well, we don't know the extent of his issue, but it didn't look good, did it, when he went off? He seemed to be trying to play through the pain barrier. I just hope it's all right. We'll probably could be by the time this pod goes out that we find out what the issue is. Hopefully he's all right, like I say, but otherwise sour end to his performance, really, because I thought he was really good playing again like he was at Norwich. Just, you know, no nonsense, great defender, passed it well out from the back.
I remember earlier in the season when we were talking about when he was playing in the middle at the back, and we were saying that at times he was dictating the tempo and playing those like long diagonals and all that sort of stuff. And having him back at left back, I mean, there's certain things that he can't do that Alicia did. I mean, there's, you know, he's not necessarily going to bomb on down the left hand side and all that sort of stuff that Alicia does. But again, he almost got back into that mode, didn't he, where he was dictating how quickly we played out from the back and whether we played it in the middle or whether he did that. I mean, that early diagonal ball to Roberts was just, you know, unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, he was fantastic. And I can't say I really argue. I mean, I might have, if it wasn't 09, maybe Bart or Ballard, I think they were fantastic. But just on the injury, I think the thing that I'm clinging on to was that it seemed like to be an impact injury rather than a muscle injury. And usually people get back from those quicker than the muscle injury. So just keeping our fingers crossed, because we haven't really got anyone else. Maybe Gooch at left back or something like that. But I think it'll be out for a week or two. I think you'll be all right.
Hopefully. Like I say, we might know more by the time this pod drops, but hopefully he's all right for the weekend, which segues us nicely into that. We'll quickly talk about the weekend. Luton at home, who are fourth in the table, so another easy one. Won four of the last five, I can see from the form. Yeah, tough. I think. But I don't think there's any reason why we should necessarily fear them. We've got nothing to lose at this stage. We're a massive 11 points behind them in the table. Mad, like, fair play to Luton. Like, they've, like, they are a club punching above their weight. Like, can you imagine Luton in the Premier League now in this day and age? Like, I've been to Kenilworth Road. Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's
just about to say.
But, like, fair play at them. Like, they're flying and they've got some good players. I think earlier in the season, that was one of the games where I didn't think we played particularly well. Did we draw 1-1 down there?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Like I say, we've got nothing to fear. I'm actually more optimistic coming off the back of the Sheffield United game than pessimistic. And we're not going to give them an easy game. I think this is a different type of challenge. They aren't a footballing team necessarily. I think they are one who will compete with us physically. And that's where we fell down recently. So that's where I'm a little bit worried. But, you know, I just think without any pressure really on the game, let's just attack it. Maybe try and learn from some of the mistakes from this one. You know, we've got to look back at the goals we conceded. Not necessarily the second one, but the first one. Like I say, I think you know, your big takeaways are going to be game management, overcommitting going forward when it's unnecessary, rash tackles in areas of pitch where you don't need to make rash tackles, that sort of thing. You know, we're not coming out with this with massive, massive issues to try and fix, which, you know, before Norwich, we did have massive issues to fix. So, yeah, I'm pretty hopeful about this one. I don't know about you, but I think that Luton, it's going to be a hard game. Like, there's a reason they're right up there. They're only a point behind Borough, so it shows how close they are. But nothing to fear from my perspective. I think they're going to be a tough test that we can at least handle for most of the game.
Yeah, it's a tough game, really tough game this weekend. The game at Luton was a strange one because, as you said, I mean, from my memories of that game, it was a proper bruising game where they were just tough. They had a team full of just bruisers who were just tough in the tackle. And they got the ball forward quickly, you know, direct balls. They had a big fella up front who they were hitting, and they kind of got the ball forward quickly. And it was just a tough game. But the thing is about Luton, why I think it's especially tough for us this weekend, looking at their away form, they haven't lost away in the last five. But they don't score that many away. I mean, they've scored.
They don't score
fewer.
Many any at all, really. They've won four of the last five games, 1-0.
But they've conceded the fewest away from home in the division. They've only conceded 15 goals in 18 games away from home.
That's a worry.
Our problem at the minute is going forward. Like, we actually, I mean, if you actually analyse the game against Sheffield United, we had the goal where Michu was kind of in that position accidentally. He was kind of too far forward because he made a run into the corner. And then apart from that, Hume's shot early on. And
did Clark hit the post? Or am I just making that up?
Oh, no, and Roberts hit the post. Yeah, Clark had the shot. But you're talking like that was the sum total of 90 minutes, four shots. And Luton are probably going to be better than Sheffield United in terms of keeping it tight at the back. Well, to be fair, Sheffield United only conceded one more goal, so it's going to be similar, and it's whether we have that moment of magic like Barr produced at Norwich or whether Michu wanders into a position he's not usually in that we need to get a goal. So my concern is us scoring at the weekend. If we score, and again, like we did at Sheffield United, hopefully we've learned from our lessons from the Sheffield United game and we actually manage the game a little better, because I think that Danny Bart and Ballard will have a tough game up front. It's going to be a physical encounter for them. It's going to be elbows flying. They're going to come out with black eyes and bust noses and all that sort of stuff. It's going to be one of them games for them. If they can keep it tight at the back and we can nick one, then I think it's going to be that sort of game. It's going to be a 1-0 either way, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like I say, the four of their last five games have finished 1-0 to Luton. So kind of see, like, they are the type of team we traditionally struggle against, but with a sprinkling of quality in there as well. You know, they're up there for a reason.
What I think will help us is they're not quick on the break. They get the ball forward quickly, but it's more direct ball. They don't, you know, what Stoke did to us four or five times, where they ripped through us with kind of 10-yard passes and got through us that way.
Which I don't. I actually think Ballard and Bart can deal with that fairly well in 09 if he's playing. Yeah. The worry is who's winning the second balls in the middle of the park. This was the complaint me and you had on these pods like a week ago. Physically competing in the middle of the park is a problem. And I think Michu and Neil in the last two games have improved, but this is a totally different game. Like Luton are going to probably stick three in the middle, and they have players equipped for that kind of battle, where I don't know if we've got those players. And, like, you know, we have Luke O'Neill, obviously, but whether he's fit is another thing. So, you know, it's going to be pretty tough. And I think what Mowbray will do, he'll just do more of the same. It'll just be, we'll try and play football against them.
For Dan Neil and Michu, it's their starting positions. So they need to learn to play as a two rather than move up and down like in a two, in a pair, like they did when we conceded the first goal against Sheffield United. Like they moved too far as a pair.
Yeah.
Right, if they kind of make that decision, right, Dan Neil's going to make that run forward. So Michu sits in front of the back four, and they kind of have that sort of partnership, which they haven't got yet. So they keep moving up and down as a pair, which means that when teams catch us on the break, they're in behind them with one pass.
Yeah.
But if you've got one committing and one staying, then, you know, so it's how we're going to play that. Because against Norwich, they were fantastic at just sitting. But at home, there's more expectation on them making that charge forward and making those forward runs. So they've got to have more of that partnership on picking and choosing when to go.
Yeah, well, we'll be back after the Luton game with another pod, I'm sure. So thanks, Chris. Cheers for joining us again.
No bother. Always a pleasure.
Cheers to the listeners once again. Make sure you catch up with rotoreport.sbnation.com before and after the Luton game. We'll have some coverage probably of the Sheffield United game as well. Still sort of bleeding into that because it's been a little short period of turnaround, you know, Wednesday into Saturday. We haven't got long between the games. So, yeah, make sure you catch up with the website, all our social media channels on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube for the podcast. And, we'll be back after Luton. Catch you there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.